kinetic energy. What's heat?
This shows up as a long, blank, silent piece on the recording now. Okay, so heat is the kinetic energy of the particles. And the kinetic energy depends on what things, Eve? Charged particles is a great answer to in general in chemistry, that's true. In this case, it's the physics formula. A half mv squared. What that means is that at a particular temperature, the particles have got a kinetic energy. And someone's saying, oh, we had a long discussion about the average kinetic energy of particles in any setup, because in every single thing, there are some particles with zero kinetic energy, no matter how hot it is, because they're banged into each other. And at the instant of banging together, they're not moving. And if V equals zero, kinetic energy equals zero. So it's nice, simple maths, we hope. Maths I can sort of cope with. So, kinetic energy, half mv squared. Heat is kinetic energy of the particles. So, if we're saying what's melting, and we said this yesterday, what is melting? Amberley. Okay, so, melting, Amberley read it really accurately. When the particles in a solid get enough kinetic energy to overcome the forces holding them in the solid lattice. Okay, so, next question, and you can think about this because I don't think we wrote it down. What's boiling, particles have got enough kinetic energy to overcome the forces holding them together. Now, we therefore need to define forces if I'm doing the random things, and I was hoping I was starting it from an intellectually pure standpoint, but I'm not. So the extra piece to the sidebar is, in fact, let's do it on the infernal technology. Okay, on the infernal technology, intermolecular and intramolecular. I get this problem a lot. I run out of space. So, intermolecular and intramolecular forces. So, Julian, what's an intermolecular force? What's an international flight? Another country. Okay? So we keep that kind of thing. Yeah, force to another. It's the force between molecules, ions, entities on their own. So, I find it useful to think international, intermolecular working. Intra is within, inter is between. So, intermolecular forces. We'll say between molecules. It's a little bit bigger than that, and intra is within molecules. Okay, E. What causes, what sort of forces are intermolecular and intramolecular ones? Yes, you do. Yeah, what type of thing? What sticks them together? What sticks atoms together? Yeah. Yeah, what sticks them together? What kind of force? Electrostatic force. Okay, the answer is always electrical. If we're saying what kind of force, the answer is always electrical, then we might want to get more specific. You know, ionic, molecular, ionic, covalent, metallic. Okay? Answer is always electrical. So we'll write that down just for fun. At base, they are always electrostatic. Okay. So we've got to think about these collections of things while we're attempting to interpret this sort of stuff. So, we got through ionic bonds, and then we're in danger of saying, well, what else, What other kind of forces hold things together? What other kind of intermolecular forces are there? Gordon? Yep. Okay. Polar and non-polar bonding. In other words, what if we've got these? In fact, the candle and the water are a reasonably good example of this. How come? Like, what holds molecules of candle wax together? Because obviously they do hold together, because it's solidish. Okay. Water. Atoms, ions, or molecules, Casey? Molecules. Okay. So water is molecules. It's held together by some kind of force. Candle wax, Reese. Atoms, ions, or molecules. This time you're not based on a formula, you've just got it based on observation. No. Well, if it's melted, it's like liquid. I mean, solid gold, liquid gold. What's the difference? Temperature. Solid, liquid, or gas. Atoms, ions, or molecules. Yeah. Now, what tells you this is molecules? Okay. Low melting point. One indicator that it's made of molecules. Second one, I don't want it to do it with this candle, so I'll find one belonging to my Year 9 students. They're bound to have left one around here somewhere. We might. Here we go. So, little pellets of paraffin wax, which is what this stuff is. So, low melting point, and I've got really strong fingernails, because you can break it up with your fingernails. You can't do that with ionic crystals or covalent things. And if I had a hammer, if you smack it with a hammer, wax doesn't shatter, it just goes. Wonder what that looks like on screen. What's the waveform of that sound? So, soft solids are molecular. Solids with low melting points are molecular. So ice is a solid with a relatively low melting point. Zero. They defined it that way, of course, but they did. There's lots of wax gas, and I'm out of matches, so I can't light the smoke, and I can't resist it. So, the forces are always electrical. So, if we're following Gordon's thing, we've got molecular solids. Now, there's two kinds of molecular solids that we're going to look at. At least two, but two major grades. So what we're looking at is the stuff like water, candle wax, solid air, those types of things under this sort of heading of molecular solids. So, we have, what do I write down for ionic solids? Relatively low melting points, no electrical conductivity, soft, usually. Now, ice obviously doesn't count as a soft solid. Well, it probably does if we're talking about Mohs scale of hardness, but it's not a great thing. Okay. So, relatively low melting points is a biggie. No electrical conductivity is a biggie. So, if we had a look at that, what's your deduction? Who are we looking for deductions here? We can look for deductions from I've got, it's a really good, so there's none of that box down there. Yeah, I've just had year 9, so I may not have. Just a minute. I might just use the last match. That's very embarrassing. Don't just guess. Seriously? You know what the gas is, right? because it says it's one thing or the other, and only one of them are going to produce gas. Yeah?
Well, I don't know.
Do it by elimination. Oh, you're doing ammonia. Do use hot water from the tap. Run under the hot tap. Okay. Sorry, we were just losing the plot, looking for volunteers. It's much better. Rhiannon. Forgot what the question was now. So, ionic solids are soft. Ionic solids have got low melting and boiling points. No electrical conductivity. What holds them together? Ask Eve. Electrostatic forces, yes. Okay, the answer is always electrostatic forces. Seriously? The answer is always electrostatic forces. And if you don't know it by now, you will by November. Okay. Electrostatic forces. We're going to keep going. Where do they come from? Now, where do they come from is a much, much bigger question. If these things are made of protons and electrons, and we've got the basic sort of arrangement of an atom, how come we get any kind of electrostatic charge between molecules? What's the answer? Okay, the answer's got to be something to do with protons and electrons. So the answers in chemistry at this point are still relatively simple. You're right. It is about polar things. Oh, you've broken your pen. So how come? Where does it come from? And the easiest answer is, if there's a distribution of charge because one atom's a stronger attractor of electrons than another, what's the technical term for a stronger attractor of electrons than another? Emma. I picked you because it starts with E. Electronegativity. Knew it all along. Tip of your tongue. Okay. So, this is molecular solids. So we're going to do the, I think we'll do white and blue because that's sort of more interesting. So, what sticks them together? Okay, the forces are electrical. So they must come from protons and electrons. Okay, so we have what's called polar molecules. Okay, we'll start. Water is a classic polar molecule. It's seriously polar. Okay? So water's a polar molecule. It's got a distribution of charge because oxygen is a bigger, nastier electron grabber than hydrogen is. Is a little dotty thing about electronegativity. So this is the periodic table from above. The most electronegative element high and right. So it's obviously not including group 18. It's including only group 17. And the most electronegative elements are in that top corner. I think the colours are actually the supposedly I think no, they're not even the colours of the stuff. I think that they're group colours, or they might be size. I can't tell you for sure. But the most electronegative things are fluorine, oxygen, chlorine, the elements in the top right hand corner of the table. The least electronegative elements are the metals. So here's another picture with some numbers on it. Now, we don't need to worry about the numbers. What you need to worry about is just the steps. Fluorine is big. It's a big electron sucker. And hydrogen, much smaller, and there's the metals really, really bad, like smaller. So it's quite nice looking at it in that kind of fashion. The biggest question that you need to ask if you're trying to work out if something's polar or not is, this is goes with atoms, ions, or molecules. Are the atoms, so if it's made of molecules, so we go atoms, ions, or molecules, if the answer is molecules, the next question is, are the atoms the same or different? There's only one exception to that question, which is if they're carbon and hydrogen, we assume they're the same at this level of chemistry. But are the atoms the same or different? If they're different, what's the next question? Are they symmetrically arranged? If they are not, then the molecule's polar. If the molecule's polar, you can work out what the force is that that's holding it together. So, water, polar. Now, if we're back to kinetic energy again for a moment, we talked about molecular speed, like kinetic energy is the amount of, effectively how fast the particles are moving. There's another thing there though, what is it? So what's the other term of the kinetic energy equation that's not velocity? Mass. Okay, mass. So, in theory, at the same temperature, would you expect particles of the same mass to have the same kinetic energy? There's one for yes. Some others for I've got no idea what he's talking about. And some others for somebody tell me so I won't get it wrong. Okay, he's right. Mass. And yes, if they've got the same mass, you'd expect them to have the same kinetic energy. So there's a reasonable sort of indication of how much effect this sort of polar thing has. And I shall read to you from the book. Reading to you from the book, which is properties. So, water. H2O. Now, we haven't talked about how much they weigh, but if you look at the periodic table, and Julian had one, some other people might have periodic tables with them, and everybody should carry one. The two numbers in the periodic table box are mass and, I beg your pardon, atomic number and mass. So we'll whack up a periodic table just to. So, oxygen. 8 protons, so there's an 8 in the box, and there's another one there that says atomic weight, 15.9994. So that's the approximate mass and atomic mass units of an oxygen atom. Guess what hydrogen is? One point oh one, yeah. And the next decimal place are 4. Yeah. So, 16 plus 1 plus 1? 18. Okay. Let's pick ammonia if we're wandering back past. What's the formula for ammonia? NH3. There's N. 14. 14 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1? 17. 17 is sort of quite a bit like 18, really. If we're talking the general atomic mass, because if we're talking about other molecules, there's chlorine at 35.5 and chlorine Cl2, so the mass is actually 70. Yeah, Gordon. Well, if you have a look at the atomic mass of hydrogen, 1.008, that's 8/1000ths of its heavier than 1. So that's deuterium and tritium. Yeah, so there's a wee bit of deuterium. Okay. Carbon, atomic weight, 12. So we find methane, CH4. What's the atomic weight, Chris? 12 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1. 16. So, we've got methane, ammonia, water. Three things of about the same weight, same sort of kinetic energy. Have a look at, well, we shall try instructing you on their boiling points. So, that one, mass 18. Ammonia, mass 17. Methane, mass is 16. Okay, we're going to go back over this and now, what's the melting point of water? Okay, melting point, boiling point. Okay, now that's the last one I expect you to know. Ammonia, melting point, negative 78, boiling point, negative 33. Methane, let's see if we can find it as carbon. Carbon. Okay, methane, if I can find it, okay, now, there's actually a pattern, but part of it is that water is actually abnormally high. If we add the other one of that list, which would be hydrogen fluoride, it sort of sits in another spot as well. Okay, now, which of those molecules are polar? Who needs this question? Rick. First two, they're polar, they've got unpaired electrons, and the atoms are different and not carbon and hydrogen. So what's the difference between polar and non-polar? A heck of a lot in terms of melting and boiling point. Okay, just rough guess, looking at those numbers. Arno, which one's the most polar? Just looking at the red numbers. Sorry? Yeah, those red numbers up the side there. Water, yeah, no brainer. Yeah, water's the most polar by heaps. Okay, stronger force holding the molecules together. Where does the force come from? The force comes, well, the force is electrostatic, and it comes from difference in sharing between the atoms. So are the atoms the same or different? If it's oxygen and hydrogen, that's a really big deal. So, I made water the most polar. Okay, forces are electrical, so they must come from protons and electrons, And therefore, we've got, we can probably put silly arrow on it, because I like the arrows. Okay, we're back to what polar means. How many people are still, like, not really completely sort of relaxed about what polar means? Okay, Casey. What do you think? No, I'm serious. I mean, I don't want to sort of front it up, but... So what this is that one atom doesn't share electrons nice, doesn't play nicely with others. So if we've got oxygen and hydrogen, oxygen gets to share electrons from both the hydrogens, and they orbit around it and give oxygen a full outer shell. What we're seeing with the polarity is how much time hydrogen gets to play with its own electrons. And if there's a big polarity difference, the answer is not very often. So if there's equal sharing, you get equal time, shared custody of the electrons. The further apart they are, like the closer we are to the top right hand corner of the table, basically the worse sharers they are. So fluorine only shares nicely with fluorine and doesn't play nicely with anything else. And the electrons spend most of their time orbiting fluorine because fluorine's got a higher attraction. The higher attraction is more protons. The shell that it's actually sharing them in, the outer shell, is close to the nucleus. So it's not playing well with others. So there's that and the geometry that makes it polar. That's the make of the thing out of rubber bands and see if you can ping people with it. If oxygen's pulling them both in, then there's the geometry of the force means that there's a distribution of charge. Back in the days when everybody wore wool, you could do this easily. If you had cheap pens, you could rub them on your woolen clothing and you could use it to bend a stream of water. So water actually reacts to static electricity. And with the really cheap big pens and nice woolen clothes, you could actually, with enough pens, you could just about run a stream of water out of the sink and onto the side bench. Because each one bends it about that much. So you can actually bend streams of water. Now, yeah, we're not going to because it's not as successful. It hasn't been as successful lately for a reason I don't completely understand. So we're going to need to keep working on the why things are polar and what's polar. And we might get people to try and explain it out loud. Okay, so I'm aware that this is something that we're all going to need to work upon. Well, you are. Hopefully I know it. Okay. So, the thing about these polar solids is the more polar they are, the higher the melting and boiling point. What does the higher melting and boiling point mean? High melting and boiling point means something in particular. Stronger the force. The higher the melting and boiling point, the stronger the force. Okay. How we doing? Candle wax. Candle wax has a melting point higher than all those things that we wrote there. How come? Do you know what the molecules are? Theoretically, it's just carbon and hydrogen. For ease, because I can't remember the exact name, we call it something like icosane, which has got the highest melting point of the alkanes in that table. It's got between 20 and 25 carbon atoms and the right number of hydrogens to fill it up. So, C25H52. Amberley, are the atoms the same or different? They're different, but these are the special case, so they are the same. Carbon and hydrogen are the same. You know, chemistry, there's always an except. So, are the atoms the same or different? Except. So, this is that moment. Are the atoms the same or different? They're the same, because this is the except moment. Okay. 25 carbons at 12 each. That's quite a lot, really. 300. All the mass about 300 plus 50, 350. Okay. How come candle has a higher melting point than ice? Why do things melt? Nowhere near enough. Okay, can someone go back and read the definition of why things melt? Why do things melt, Rhys? Okay, there's enough kinetic energy to overcome the forces holding the particles together. What force is it going to be? Now, there's at least a piece of the answer here just in terms of that, because what are the two things that are required for kinetic energy? Mass and velocity. So this one's got a lot of which one? Mass. It's like big. It's seriously, yeah. We'll try and keep it so that it's. I won't try and ask too many embarrassing questions. Okay, it's mass. It's got a big mass. So mass of over 300 grams per number of particles. Like, so we're comparing this with the 18 for water. So to get enough kinetic energy to break it open, we do need to heat it up quite a bit to get it to go. Big molecules have higher melting points than small molecules. There's a close relative of this, which is the gas they put in lighters. But it's got a boiling point of minus a half and a melting point of about minus 37. I'm probably wrong about that one. Bigger the molecule, higher the melting point. But the forces that hold these things together aren't just kinetic energy, the forces are also electrostatic. How do we get an electrostatic force if the molecules share evenly? If they all play nicely and they share their electrons equally, how do we get something that attracts the molecules together so that it actually sticks into a candle? Yeah, it's a hard question, I probably shouldn't even tell you. It's probably only knowledge really for big people. Are you leaving already? Excellent. Okay. Well, if it's that time of the day, I think we might get the fruit machine out and randomly pick somebody to ask that question of tomorrow. Where does the force come from that holds non-polar molecules together? Okay. Some of you might want to write that down, thinking about what your chances are of being asked it, because we'll have an equal opportunity ask.